For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free weekly email newsletter, Wednesday Wake Up, which you should subscribe to, and with gratitude to viewers in Hong Kong who've made it number 45 on our list of countries by view. And yes, I did warn you up front that not all the items on the list were technically countries, although I wish that Hong Kong were, instead of being under the iron heel of the communists in Beijing. So if you're there, please keep watching, but draw the curtains. And speaking of the iron heel of the communists in Beijing, and the Achilles heel of Western nations run by feckless fattists, our top story this week was the saga of the last steel mill in the home of the Industrial Revolution. As we mentioned briefly 3 weeks ago, quote, the Chinese owners of the last British steel mill rejected an offer of £500 million from the government to help it switch to green energy. £500 million tossed blindly into the furnace, and it still wasn't enough. It would be hard to look stupider than the government and the political establishment do for having blundered into this embarrassment and not seen it coming. Even The Guardian notes that, quote, senior labor figures have urged the government to review Chinese investment in UK infrastructure in the wake of the British steel crisis, warning that a rapprochement with Beijing could risk national security, end quote. But the communist owners of the Scunthorpe steel mill didn't close it just to undermine Britain's capacity to build armaments in an increasingly dangerous world. They also wrote off their massive capital investment partly because they couldn't make money making steel, and were in fact losing some £700,000 a day in Britain's green-brown economy, where soaring energy costs are causing grisly economic decline, which the elites also didn't see coming. How do you say dough in the King's English again? Especially as it looks as if the government is being backed into nationalizing the plant, an approach that worked so well in the 1970s, without even having a plan to keep it open if they do. And would you really trust such people to run a factory? Or to run state-subsidized science? For years, we've been hectored that holding the world to the Paris Agreement limit of 1.5 degrees Celsius warming from pre-industrial times, a term that alarmists used to mean 75 years after the Industrial Revolution, not before there was industry, was critically crucial in its vital crucialness. But alas, their rhetoric was unpersuasive, their plans were unsound or both, and they now admit that 1.5 is out of reach. And suddenly we're told that while it was essential, it didn't really matter, whereas 2 degrees Celsius is like, this time for sure, man, unless it's not. In fact, Climate Cosmos early this year endarkened us on, quote, top 10 impacts of a 1.5C versus 2C global temperature rise, end quote, and apparently, quote, from ecosystems to economies, the stakes couldn't be higher, end quote. So 1.5C never really mattered. They were just trying to panic us into doing whatever they told us to. Meanwhile, Canada's state broadcaster, the CBC, brought us a friendly, patronizing presenter to answer the question, quote, if we've missed the 1.5 degree climate target, what's next, end quote, in just 3 minutes and 11 seconds. And she brought us, of all people, James Hansen, declaring 1.5, quote, deader than a doornail, end quote. And the piece shrilled, quote, Earth has crossed the critical 1.5 degree C warming threshold, according to 2 major global studies. But scientists say there is still hope for keeping warming below the next target of 2C, end quote. Why bother if 1.5 was critical, whatever you think that word even means? Ah, because with that all but unnoticeable additional 0.5 degrees, quote, if we hit 2 degrees Celsius, that means millions more people and ecosystems are impacted compared to 1.5, end quote. Millions more ecosystems? Really? And impacted? Say it ain't so, or say what it means. Especially if the millions refers to people, note that there are now some 8 billion people in the world, so millions isn't even 1%. And as it was, we are told, some 0.5 degrees warmer by the First World War than the Crimean War, tell us what massive ecological impacts took place because of that change. Or did nobody at the time even notice? In the newsletter, we also quote the San Bernardino Sun that, quote, after a series of winter storms over the past 2 months, Southern California drivers may have noticed they're navigating more than just traffic. They're also dodging a growing number of potholes, end quote. Winter storms? And here we were told that season was vanishing even in chilly Canada. What's it doing in sunny California? Vacationing? Perhaps. After all, Climate Depot informs us, quote, California snowpack at healthiest 3-year stretch in 25 years after wet winters, end quote. Still, small dudes won't know what snow is, man. Meanwhile, Mark Carney's G-Fans increasingly resembles the GI of U.S. Army mythology, who was dead but too dumb to lie down. Reuters' Sustainable Switch delicately describes it as, quote, the world's leading bank coalition looking to help tackle climate change has voted to ditch some of its more stringent membership rules to better reflect the slow pace of change in the real economy, its chair told Reuters, end quote. But what really happened is that they bailed on the supposedly crucial 1.5 degrees Celsius red line while pretending they were continuing to aim at some unspecified thing below 2 degrees Celsius, because neither is remotely practical given what humans are doing and what nature is. Oh, and apparently it's not just Gaza. Evidently, quote, Israel will face massive climate disasters this summer, President Isaac Herzog warns, end quote. Massive. And, all together now, it will be worse than average, because State Comptroller Netanyahu Engelman chimed in, quote, as a country located in a hotspot region, the climate changes Israel is expected to face due to global warming will be more intense than the global average and may have serious implications for its economic, social, and security resilience, end quote. Or maybe not, because this summer it might still just be a hot, dry desert that stubborn inhabitants made bloom anyway. But if that's the case, will either fearmonger apologize? Oh, and this just in, experts discover weather has always happened. Climate Cosmos and MSN forgot themselves earlier this spring and ran 5 weather anomalies that have shaped history. They were the year without a summer in 1816, which caused, of all things, a disastrous cooling, the Dust Bowl of the 1930s, the Little Ice Age from 1300 to 1850, which they even linked to reduced solar activity while again conceding that cooling was bad, Hurricane Katrina in 2005, which hardly seems historic, though it was bad, and the Indian monsoon failure of 1876 to 78, a classic piece of hydrological climate whiplash that you just can't blame on CO2. Not only that, but the Daily Mail ran a story, and MSN shared it, headline, quote, climate change is not the main cause of floods, scientists say, end quote, which might seem blindingly obvious, but given the current state of debate, it's actually a welcome insight, even if we'd also rather see some scientists say. And now for some good news. One reason for thinking the climate alarmist position is crumbling in its moment of apparent triumph is that everything about it seems to be coming apart at once. But while some of us think increasingly obvious and ragged holes in the logic and science are crucial, others point to the policy failures that are turning what were once seductive speculative dreams into practical nightmares. For instance, people are beginning to realize that the vaunted switch from conventional to alternate fuels is not going according to plan. And the spot meant to be occupied by a wind and solar unicorn is instead still occupied by a big dark coal troll. And part of the reason why is that coal remains an affordable, reliable source of power that can now be burned very cleanly. The New York Times Climate Forward may warn of, quote, the vicious cycle of extreme heat and fossil fuels, end quote, where CO2 heats the planet, so people need more air conditioning powered by fossil fuels, and more air conditioning powered by fossil fuels releases more CO2. But if other sources of energy, like wind and solar, worked better than coal, it wouldn't be happening. So the real vicious cycle is in their reasoning. Now, part of what's happening here is that much of the world, especially communist China, never remotely bought into climate alarmism, though they pretended to in the hopes that the West would cripple itself economically and militarily. And part of it is a resolute determination to cling to fantasies about alternative energy. For instance, Heatmap recently assuring us, quote, solar, wind, and lithium-ion battery storage are proven winners in the clean energy economy. But what is the next suite of technologies and tools that will help accelerate the path to achieving global climate goals, end quote? Well, it better be something than those things. Which is why it is encouraging that in the real world some governments are finally starting to pass the alarmist sanity test of turning to fission nuclear power, including, we're surprised and pleased to note, the Canadian government. Moreover, even the New York Times Climate Forward is writing sympathetically about reliable ways of disposing of spent reactor fuel, whose imaginary unmanageability was long meant to be a decisive argument against nuclear power. Other governments, alas, are still building pastures for the unicorns they are sure will shortly bound into view, and wondering why so many coal trolls are still sitting there instead. And speaking of fantasy, We were particularly puzzled to hear from Scientific American that, quote, researchers have found an environmentally safer way to extract the lithium-6 needed to create fuel for nuclear fusion reactors. The new approach doesn't require toxic mercury as conventional methods do, end quote. Okay, sounds clever. But since there aren't nuclear fusion reactors, you might as well be telling us about some new and cleaner way to make dilithium for the warp drives. Or hitching a lift on a Vogon ship to explore new worlds where they already have 23rd century technology. Or riding a tornado to Oz. Thus, in our next Look It Up, we say, as we head into hurricane season, be prepared for the climate alarmists who, when a cyclone inevitably hits, will have you believe that such things have never happened before, or never before in such numbers. Of course, it's a matter of statistical certainty that every other year will be at or above average, on average. And as to what is average, and what's happening, the Colorado State University Real-Time Tropical Cyclone Tracker, which divides the world into storm basins, then lists the actual number and the expected number thus far in various categories from named storms to major hurricanes. And the numbers are updated daily. So as the hype blows harder and harder, you can stay calm and look it up. Speaking of hurricanes, Roger Pilkey Jr. and Ryan Mao have written a summary on the 2024 hurricane season, when there were 11 major landfalling tropical cyclones, the highest number on record. Which can only mean one thing. Or not. Because the total number of hurricanes, including minor ones, while high, was only the third highest since 1970, and the highest number was in 1971. Also, the number of minor hurricanes has been declining slightly. And despite any alarmist tilt the IPCC has, on the topic of tropical cyclones, Pilkey Jr. and Mao note that the IPCC denies that current data indicate that global hurricane activity is changing, let alone that it's being changed by greenhouse gases. Finally, Orange Man good for Mandarin Orange. Because from the CO2science.org archive, in 2006 there were two experiments on Citrus reticulata blanco, that's mandarin orange tree, showing that an extra 300 parts per million of CO2 in the air boosted plant growth on average by 24% when exposed to additional salt stress, and by 35% when not exposed to salt stress. So, if Donald Trump follows through on his pledges to expand American gas, oil, and beautiful clean coal production, and CO2 levels rise as a result, the Christmastime crop of mandarin oranges may be huge this year. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I know central planning never works.